dynamics across the 15-year arc of their early career, from deciding whether they want to go to grad school to getting tenure or transitioning those skills into a different setting. And our first panel today is called Generating Great Ideas in Academia and Science Careers. And our panelists will be Jose Gomez-Marquez, please feel free to welcome him. And then Leslie Wickman and Alan Dickin and Bob Kaida. So we'll get started here. And Tom, anything you want to add as we introduce folks here?
Were you going to introduce them, or do you want them to introduce themselves?
Can you do that, or do we do
Sure.
So this is Tom Grosch, Associate Director of Emerging Scholars Network, and he will be the moderator for this first panel.
All right.
I haven't even met you before. Great to meet you. co-leads at MIT Lab, so that's cool. Pretty close here. And TED Fellow, looks like. Uses DIY. What is that?
Do it yourself.
Really? That's what it is. Making technologies to solve health problems creatively in low resource settings. That's awesome. Okay. And then Leslie Wickham. Executive Director of American Scientific Affiliation, worked with NASA, isn't that really cool? And Lockheed Martin on the Hubble Space Telescope and International Space Station Programs, corporate astronaut for Lockheed Martin. I always love that picture, astronaut suit. Alan Dickin, geology professor at McMaster University, and it's right here, works in radiogenic isotope geology. Wow. And crustal evolution in the Greenville province of the Canadian Shield. I have a lot to learn there. And Bob Kaida is a researcher in physics at Princeton University, previous president of the American Scientific Affiliation, and has helped a local church run a high school vacation Bible school with a science component, which was really cool. I shared about that earlier. And so we're kind of taking a look at generating great ideas in academia and science. So how can you jumpstart your ability to innovate and go creatively in a science career? So we have some innovators here. So why don't we just let you start off? Okay, good deal.
Do you want me to just talk about
share for a couple minutes, and just a larger group of people, about 5 minutes.
What we do in the lab is we take health challenges, and instead of putting on the solver hat, which is what we always do, obviously, in academia or in engineering in this case, we think about how to generate tools so that everyday people that are solving these things anyway can amplify their own approaches. And so what that means is we talk to a lot of nurses, we talk to a lot of doctors, the work is in the developing world, but a lot of the work actually has turned domestically. And every day could be looking at talking to nurses. And for instance, I was talking to a nurse in Iowa the other day saying we have these babies and they're going over, they have opioid withdrawal because their moms are opioid. And the only way to calm them down, if you've ever held a baby, you know what I'm talking about, you just kind of pat them on the back and that sort of stuff. And one of these, like what we call long tail challenges, they didn't have enough nurses to go around, so they wanted to do a, they wanted to see if there was such a thing, you know, could you have a machine sort of just do that in a sense, more like those Brookstone chairs, but for little babies. And so this is an example of how we approach these types of problems. We could yes, create a crack team of engineering students and science students at the lab and say, let's go make a soft robotic suit for the baby, you know, keep it really safe and everything and do that for them. What we do in the lab is we say, okay, how can I make a construction kit for that nurse in Iowa that has never made anything in hardware aside from, you know, whatever she does on her daily job, and have them put together that construction kit and then create a diffusion strategy so that they can teach 10,000 nurses in the Midwest how to do that. And so it's almost like it's a teaching and it's an instrumentation challenge for us. And we extend that to lots of other techniques, whether it's making machines that generate drugs or making machines that generate diagnostics. But I think the overall approach is generating the tools so others can do cooler things than we do.
That's awesome. I have lots of questions.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, Leslie, how about you share a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I have worn a lot of different hats in my life. I've done a lot of different things. And in fact, currently I have 3 part-time jobs.
Oh, my goodness.
And so the one that I'm most passionate about, of course, is the ASA position. I'm executive director. And that is technically is a half-time job, but you know what they say about the myth of the part-time job, right? Everybody, you get paid half-time, but you actually work full-time. So I do that, and then I also have a part-time job in the aerospace world where I study the national security impacts from climate change issues, particularly focusing on the Arctic area. And then I also teach because I love being in the classroom. And a lot of people will look at me, students in particular, and say, well, why do you have 3 jobs? And the answer to that for me is quite simple. I cannot find a single job that will allow me to do all the different things that I want to do. And for me, a big part of my interaction with students is figuring out, you know, I mean, because of the fact that I've done a lot of different things and because of the fact that I was dubbed the corporate astronaut while I was at Lockheed, a lot of people ask me, it's like, how did you plan your career to be so interesting and get to do so many fun different things? And I learned a long time ago that I was not in the driver's seat. And a big part of it for me has just been following God through the doors that he opens for me. That's not to say that you don't have any responsibility, but I think for me, what that boils down to is knowing yourself. And what I've kind of come up with is a Venn diagram for students. In one circle, make a list of everything that you really love, okay, all of your passions and interests. In another circle, make a list of all the things you're really good at. And, you know, we all have things that we're good at, but we don't enjoy doing. We all also have things that we really love, but we're no good at, right, if we're honest. And so really it's the overlap of those two circles. It's the sweet spot in the overlap of those two circles in the Venn diagram that is where you should be looking for your career. It's like, you know, what am I good at and what do I love doing? If you can find something that marries those two things, then it's easy to follow God's leading too, because whenever a door opens that marries those two things, then you can pretty much guarantee that God has his fingerprints all over that. And another kind of explicit example of that for me is, you know, I grew up in a Christian home. I always knew I was interested in science and exploration. And at a certain point in my career, I became very concerned about environmental issues. And so that really developed into a passion of mine. And so looking at how we as Christians should be taking care of the environment that God has bestowed us with. I mean, you know, Genesis 1 talks about every step of creation, God turns and looks at it and says, this is good, you know. And if God called his creation good, then how much more ought we to look at it as good and something worthy of care? So I started looking at, you know, how can I marry those two things, bring my interest in the environment together with my faith. And then a third component of that for me is my care for fellow humans. You know, so how can you do things that will be environmentally friendly and serve others through my Christian worldview? And so one of the areas that I've worked with many students on is this area that's called appropriate technologies. You know, how can you bring sustainable ways of providing clean water or good agriculture to a local community in a way that can be sustainable in that environment, in that ecosystem, and also at the same time increase their standard of living. So that's something, like I say, where I'm marrying things from these various passions, things that I'm talented at, and ways that I want to serve God.
Oh, that's beautiful. Bob, how would you share some of your insights?
I do fusion energy research, and one of the reasons why it's taken so long to develop this as an energy source is that what happens is that every step of the way, when you try to go from something that works literally on a tabletop, these were experiments done many years ago, to then something that's the size of this room, to ultimately something that's the size of a power plant, things get to be more complex. Because, you know, what happens is that even though as a physicist one likes to think that one could reduce problems to very fundamental core issues, the problem is that there's also a strong engineering component with what I do, and these systems have to work as an integrated system all together. And so that's presenting certain challenges. And so the reason why you have to be innovative is that then each step of the way, you have to solve problems that you couldn't have dreamed of were problems before. Now what happens is that under that kind of environment, well, admittedly, it's not quite for the faint of heart, because there are points in my career where to be innovative, I had to go ahead and learn entirely new areas. And this is the thing. In that process, you have to be humble enough to realize that then you're going to go into areas of expertise that other people have, but then you're going to be at the bottom of the totem pole. So I remember writing a paper in the middle of my career, the first paper in this particular area having to do with materials for use in fusion reactors, and I got this report back from the referee that said, "This is amateurish." And then, so there were good comments, and then I continued to revise this. But here, I think this is where the faith part comes in. Because what I realized is that what is helping me is to then appreciate the fact that my worth is not in what I do professionally. It's the ability to do the work is a gift from God. Where I am is a gift from God. And if that's the perspective, then I don't have to worry about then going into a new area to be innovative, to talk to people, to learn from other people, because I don't have to prove that this is what my worth is. And I think that that's an important perspective. I'm not saying that you have to be a Christian to do this, but I think that that's been a big help in terms of then how I've been able to, with humility, appreciate the gifts that I have from God, and then go on from there to be innovative. Be humble, enjoy what God has enabled you to do, and that's my general principle I'd like to share with you about being innovative.
That's beautiful.
Alan, did you have a PowerPoint?
Yeah, so my job is to mess everything up by insisting on doing a PowerPoint.
I'm sure it would be great.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can make it work.
Oh, yeah.
Is that it? Yeah, okay. Sorry, you know, to break the mold or whatever. So, My little story here is that I'm actually going to... Oh, I'm going to go back to the previous slide. Yeah, my story is that when I was given this mandate, as it were, how can you jumpstart your ability to innovate and grow creatively in a science career, my initial reaction was, I have no idea. This doesn't speak to my experience at all. So I got back to the organizers and said, you know, this isn't how I think. And of course, the immediate reaction was, oh, this sounds really interesting. Okay, tell your story or something like that. So then I was puzzled as to why my experience didn't fit the expectations that I was given. So that I started doing some research. Right? You have to excuse me. Excuse me. And yeah, for the first time, paradoxically, I read Thomas Kuhn, The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, and this is a very controversial book, but I think these quotes sum it up, and it's an interesting idea, which I want to share. You know, he says, mopping up operations are what engage most scientists throughout their careers. They constitute what I'm here calling normal science. That enterprise seems an attempt to force nature into the preformed and relatively inflexible box that the paradigm supplies. So this is the concept of the paradigm. No part of the aim of normal science is to call forth new sets of phenomena. Indeed, those that will not fit the box are often not seen at all, nor do scientists normally aim to invent new theories, and they're often intolerant of those invented by others. So this is suggesting that science is kind of, if you like, much more programmatic and less original than we thought. So then my wife's like, well, okay, you need to give a case study. And so on my fridge, I have some quotes. On my fridge, I have some quotes from Sidney Brenner, a Nobel Prize winner, that I thought would be appropriate for this meeting because biotech is a major theme of the meeting. And I found his experience to be strangely in tune with what Kuhn said. He's talking about his early experience. Oh, I was in a seminar class of his a long time ago, before he was famous. And he said, to have seen the development of a subject, which is molecular biology, which was looked upon with disdain by the establishment from the very start, actually become the basis of our whole approach to biology today, that was something worth living for. And that is a very captivating feeling, you know, that he was in a very exciting situation because he was going against the paradigm. What people don't realize is at the beginning it was just a handful of people who saw the light, if I can put it that way. So it was like belonging to an evangelical sect. Oh, by the way, this guy is an atheist, but he understands the Christian mindset, because he probably went to Sunday school. It was like belonging to an evangelical sect because there were so few of us and all the others sort of thought there wasn't something wrong with us. They weren't willing to believe. Of course, they just said, well, what we're trying to do is impossible. That's what they said about crystallography of large molecules. And so we were trying to do with chemistry of proteins and nucleic acids what looked hopeless for a long time. So now the key point here. Why was this so paradoxical? Why was this so against the paradigm? Biology got its main success by the importation of physicists that came into the field not knowing any biology. And I think that's very important. In America, you've got to have credits from a large number of courses before you do a PhD. That's very good for training a very good average scientific work professional. But that training doesn't allow people the kind of room to expand their own creativity. The most important thing today is for young people to take responsibility to actually know how to formulate an idea and how to work on it. This is the difficult bit, right? Not to buy into the so-called apprenticeship. I think you can only foster that by having sort of deviant studies. That is, you go on and do something really different. So, frankly, this is very problematical because what he's telling us to do is against, well, all the advice, all the natural advice. So, very briefly, since I've used up most of my 5 minutes, to talk about my own experience. So I have two research fields. My official research field, which is to use neodymium isotopes to date rocks and map the Canadian Shield. And yes, I didn't actually have this idea. This was someone else who gave this idea to me, but by stating a problem on the way to a field camp. In fact, this was in the good old days when the chairman sent me to learn how to do field school the year before I was going to teach it. Like, you wouldn't normally get that. Normally you'd be like, go and learn how to do it and teach it at the same time. But because it was good old days, I was sent out there just to learn. And so when I heard this great idea, instead of actually going and helping at field camp, I went and collected my own set of rocks in the other direction. And that began my 30-year career in mapping the Canadian Shield. But I also have an unofficial field, which is understanding Genesis based on a book, Clues to Creation in Genesis, which I read 40 years ago. And paradoxically, I've discovered in a painful process over these 40 years that almost everything he said was wrong. But a tiny bit of that book is really true. And I spent the other 20 years trying to prove that the other little bit that he did was true. And did I have another slide? Oh yeah, okay, so what can we do about this? Well, being realistically, most scientists are destined to work within a paradigm rather than to overturn it with a great idea. The most likely place you'll find a great idea is in the gap between disciplines, because that's the bit that's unexplored. But it's risky. Also, if you have a great idea, you will have an exciting life, but you may face opposition. So here I'm going to call out the ASA, because we're told for the ASA, yeah, that when we write an submit an abstract, it should be based on work in our area of disciplinary expertise. Now, there can be exceptions to that for abstracts with exceptional originality and scholarship. The problem is, who's going to decide if the abstract shows exceptional originality and scholarship? It's going to be the people who are in the dominant paradigm, which is the very paradigm I'm trying to overturn. So you have to then, so the message we learn from all this is that, as Thomas Kuhn also said, actually great ideas don't come along every day. And you can't say, I want a great idea. You have to receive it from God, of course. And if you get a great idea, it'll be a life's work trying to make the case for it. And there will be a lot of opposition, but it will be a very exciting lifetime. So there's the paradoxes, and you guys have to figure out the solution, I think. And I should take this down. Thank you.
Success.
I hope everyone likes this.